Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, September 21st, 2014. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. You can like it on Facebook if you like it. Rate it, review it on iTunes or Stitcher. You can follow the show on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, Chris Lamberth, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. What time is it right now? It's 3:24 a.m. I just got done watching the Jay-Z Beyonce On the Run tour, and I must say, guys, it was fun. I don't consider myself to be a huge Jay-Z or Beyonce fan. I like them. I respect their talent. I enjoyed it. It was fun. Part of me felt like Jay-Z is one. He's like obviously one of the top rappers of all time. He's one of the greats, but it just seemed like he was there just to fill in time between Beyonce's costume changes. He did it with hits, with some like really great songs, but it was just like, that was Beyonce's show. And it was cool. It was cool to see a huge tour like that with a black artist, black love, or black. I think they're in love. It seemed genuine. It didn't seem manufactured. Or maybe am I just being a sap here? Am I being duped by Jay-Z and Beyonce? I think they're in love. And you know, I was looking at that baby, Blue Ivy. I think that's really their kid, because you could tell it looks like the baby at least looks like Jay-Z, and maybe Beyonce's features will come in soon, hopefully. But that's a cute baby, and I feel like that's their kid. You know, maybe part of me's buying into this whole thing. I kind of feel like that. One thing that kind of made me feel a little uneasy was the fact that like they're on the run. Obviously, they're supposed to be. They're going with this whole Bonnie and Clyde thing, and I get it. But then like there's a scene where I guess they're robbing a bank and Beyonce was like, put your motherfucking hands up. And it just didn't seem like that was forced. I don't really know that I like Beyonce cursing like that. You know, guys, I don't know how I really felt about that, but overall it was fun. It was a long show. I feel like everybody that paid for that show got their money's worth. I thought it was good, you know, good show. I wouldn't have paid to go see it, but it was a good show, you know. All right, so right now ESPN is on mute, and they're showing the highlights of all the college football games. The reason why this show is going up early, or is while I'm recording this early, is because I started to watch Florida State and Clemson. But I fell asleep while I was watching it. I didn't. And then when I woke up, it was overtime. And then Florida State scored and won. And obviously everybody, as you're probably listening to this, you know, if you're a football fan, that Jameis Winston initially got suspended for the first half of the game for making a lewd comment in the cafeteria or student union area on campus at Florida State by yelling a meme called fuck her, saying fuck her right in the pussy. And he yelled that, got on a table or something and yelled that. And then some of the students, his fellow students, started tweeting about it. So he got suspended for that. But I think it was a cumulative suspension for him kind of being a douche. this Jameis Winston thing is a little more, there's some people want to be black and white with their opinion about Jameis Winston, and they want to be black and white about a lot of the stuff going on with the NFL right now. I'll just say this. I feel a little bit conflicted with this whole Jameis Winston thing. I feel like it is a cumulative suspension. First of all, in 2012, you probably know about the alleged sexual assault charge that got dropped. Charges were not, he wasn't charged. He wasn't charged for that. And then he played all last year. And then around the time when it came for Heisman voting, when that came to the forefront, that got brought out. It happened before the season started. And then now that the team was doing well and he was about to get that Heisman, they tried to stop him from getting that. So they released that. And I've said this before in the show, the Tallahassee Police Department, if something happened, they're at fault, for not, locking this guy up, for not prosecuting him. Okay. So he won the chip and won the Heisman. Then there was the incident with the crab legs at Publix, $32 worth of crab legs, stolen, or they probably gave it to him and then somebody reported it. Who knows? Who really knows what happened? Only God knows, and the people that were there at Publix that day with Jameis Winston, they know. So he got suspended from the baseball team, missed some games there. He's also a pitcher. And then apparently I just found out about he didn't pay for a soda at Burger King. Look, when you're a college football player and you're like you're the guy, you're a Heisman Trophy winner, you're a championship winning quarterback, people give you shit. I don't know about the Publix thing, but a soda from Burger King, he either forgot to pay for the soda or he didn't pay for a soda. Sometimes people give you shit. I mean, I'm not, so there's all these incidents, and then he yells, fuck her right in the pussy, which is a meme that I had never heard of. Maybe I'm just not hip or cool enough. I'm just too old to really know what that meme is. I guess you'd have to look that up. I looked it up. It's something that people say during, like, I guess if a news reporter is on location, somebody walks by and yells that, and that's supposed to be funny. College kids do stupid shit like that. The guy's young. I still think he should be held to he should hold himself to a higher standard because he's the quarterback of the Florida State Seminoles. He's a Heisman Trophy winner. He's the leader of that team. I feel like he should be more responsible. I feel like the people around him should be trying to tell him and teaching him to get his head right. It's obviously he's not getting it. It's some stuff. It's shit that he's not getting. And then, so Florida State decided to, was it Thursday night or was it Friday? It had to be Friday that the athletic director decided to suspend him for the whole game. So Wednesday, it's a half, the first half. Then Friday, if you're going to suspend the guy for a game, just do it. Do it make the decision the first time. Not, we found out some more stuff. What else did they find out? What else did they find out? When are we going to learn about that? When he's when he's about to get drafted so they can fuck up his draft prospects? Dan Le Batard had a great point on his radio show. He's talking about, you treat these guys like they're professionals and you critique them and you judge them and they're not getting paid. If you really want them to act a certain way, pay them. pay him. He's getting treated like he's a leader of a franchise. He's getting treated like that. He's getting judged that way. All these guys are. But when you're the Heisman Trophy winner, man, you have to have some form of decorum. And it's something that, Dan Le Batard on his radio show makes fun of a lot of the quarterbacks that come on the show. But when they give you that robotic quarterback talk, manager, executive talk, oh, I think if we score more points, we'll win and we'll do this. And we got this is a great team we're facing. We just got to try to, do what we practice, work on what we practice and execute that in the game. And even though that's boring, that's how a lot of these guys should be. But again, those are professional players. Jameis Winston is 20 years old. Granted, when I was 20, I didn't do the shit that he did. Some of the things he did, I probably wouldn't dream of doing. But it goes back to all your life, ever since you're a kid. If you have the proclivity, the natural ability to be, and the potential to be a fantastic athlete, this is what's, people are never really going to tell you no. And when you hear that no, that fucks with you. I don't know, man. I just feel like there's, and then during the game, at the start of the game, Jameis comes out. He knows he's suspended for the whole game. He comes out with his full uniform on, and then Jimbo Fisher tells him he has to go change, and he acts like he doesn't know what's going on, and he goes to change into, takes off his pads and has jersey and warm-up clothes or whatever on. This guy isn't getting it. He needs to mature. I don't know if this suspension is going to help him learn that, but he's got it. If he wants to have a future in the NFL, you got to learn how to play by the rules, man. And it's frustrating to me because I don't want to see this guy mess up what could be a promising NFL career. I just don't like seeing these kids, fucking up stuff like that. Much like the Lenny Cook. Well, not exactly like Lenny Cook, but I talked about that documentary on a past episode. But it came up. I was listening to Damian Lemon, friend of the podcast, has a show called In the Conversation that he has with Vladimir Camaño, a fellow comedian, and Ali Muhammad, who's he's a filmmaker, I believe, artist. And they have a weekly podcast that just started probably 2 months ago. And I just started listening to it. It's really good. It's on iTunes and SoundCloud. I think they're with Stand Up New York Labs. It's a good podcast. Check it out. I was listening back to maybe the second or third episode, and I think Damian brought that up. But that documentary was really depressing. Almost like a lot like Youngstown Boys, stuff that happens to Maurice Clarett. Like Maurice Clarett, similar thing. This guy he leads his team to the national championship. Maurice Clarett, Ohio State, this is around 2003, leads his team to the Heisman Trophy and the national championship. And when he decides to go, he wants to go pro, they shut that down. He was a true freshman. They shut it down. And it's just career went on a tailspin. It went on a downward spiral. A lot of it, he was at fault for a lot of it. But I think the NCAA was also led to that demise, too. And I feel like this is happening with Jameis. And, I think you get to a point where, all these guys are expendable. I don't want to quote everything that Dan Le Batard says, but it rings true. These players are expendable, and when they're done with you, that's it. I was looking, just even on a talking about at the NFL, Roger Goodell spoke this past Friday, and he was, you know, he really didn't say anything. And everybody was white people are mad at Roger Goodell, man. And something's got to give, because when white people are angry, stuff gets done and there's consequences and repercussion. One of the guys who's the Teddy Bruschi was I was listening to him talk. He said, you know, they're asking him, oh, did the league contact you after, since you've been retired? He's like, nope, just a couple times. Nope. It's like they don't care. Once you're done, you're done. And then you could see that with, as far as like healthcare, insurance, what kind of the pension plan that these guys have. Yes, they're making millions of dollars, but a lot of the people that built that, helped build that league, you know, they're killing themselves because of brain damage. They're you know, they're beating their wives and hitting their kids, and you know, it's a very complex issue when you try to break it down and look at it, and then even like look at it from a macro level. But just with this Jameis Winston thing, I think it's more complicated. There's more than meets the eye to this whole thing. And I feel conflicted about it. Yes, he's a jackass. I saw somebody tweet that, you know, this guy's an asshole. He doesn't get it. You can't use him being a kid as an example, but it takes longer for some people to mature. You have to account for that for some people. When you were that age doesn't, and you didn't act that way, doesn't mean that other young kids that were your age other kids did act that way. I was around a lot of people that act that way, you know? So it just, it's interesting. And one of my favorite followers on Twitter, Corey Holcomb, comedian, heard me mention him on the show before, the Corey Holcomb on Twitter, I believe. He said, you know, he's kind of got like some conspiracy theories towards it, but he was basically saying, you know, when you have an athlete, he's basically said, you know, it's the beast is jealous. I think the beast is code word for the white man, I think. But he was just saying something along the lines of, you know, they did the same thing to LeBron in high school. They suspended him for a couple of games. They took away some of his games, you know, and they did for that, for his mom getting that Jeep, and he was getting a jersey, you know, just trying to like, you know, fuck with him to show that, you know, you're not untouchable. I don't know. It's just a lot of bullshit, man. I was rooting for Florida State to lose. But I hope, basically, long story short, I hope Jameis Winston gets it together, because he's got talent. And a lot of people say he's one of the best college freshmen. At the time when he was a freshman, you know, he was one of the best college quarterbacks that a lot of people have ever seen. So, I hope he gets it together. I hope that he continues to evolve and mature, and so he could be a good football player. Make some money off of his skills, man. That's all you want for people, you know. Have a decent life, all that good stuff. All right. So this is the Mundane Festival Podcast. This is episode 85. I'm going to call this episode Chad Johnson. And like we always do, in the spirit of All Balls Don't Bounce, that podcast, I'm going to call this episode Chad Johnson. Let's read some of his bio and stats and all that good stuff. We're going to say, all right, so Chad Johnson was born on January 9th, 1978. In Miami, Florida. After graduating from Miami Beach Senior High School in 1997, Johnson attended Langston University but did not play football. In 1997, he transferred to Santa Monica College, a community college in Santa Monica, California. In 2000, he transferred to Oregon State University after aggressively being recruited by coach Dennis Erickson to play for the Oregon State Beavers football team alongside future Bengals teammate TJ Houshmandzadeh. He led his team to an 11-1 season and a victory over Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl that year. He also broke a school record for the longest touchdown reception with a 97-yard reception in a game against Stanford University. So let's read some of his let's read some of his career information. He's currently playing for the Montreal Alouettes in the CFL. Wide receiver, of course, drafted in 2001, round 2, pick number 36 by the Cincinnati Bengals. From 2001 to 2010, played with the Bengals. 2011, played with the New England Patriots. A little bit, he was on the practice squad of the Miami Dolphins, and he got cut after he headbutted his wife, his now ex-wife, in the head. And that sucked because he was at the point where he looked good in practice. Of course, his skills were slightly diminished, but you know, he wasn't the same Chad Johnson. But he was looking good running those routes. He's known to be one of the best route runners. Anyway, career highlights and awards: 6-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All-Pro, AFC champion in 2011, 3-time AFC receiving yards leader, NFL receiving yards leader in 2006, 10,000 receiving yards, Cincinnati Bengals 40th anniversary team, Bengals franchise record. I can just click on like his Bengals franchise records. Let's do that. Most receiving yards in a season, 1,440. Most receiving yards of all time, 10,507. Most receptions, 751. Most touchdown receptions, 65. Most receiving yards in a game, 260. Most seasons with over 1,000 receiving yards, 7. So there you go. Chad Johnson, super talented player. Is he a borderline Hall of Famer? I don't know. I leave that up to you. You let me know if you think he's a borderline player. Very flamboyant wide receiver. Fun to watch. I really enjoy watching him play. Never really caused any too much trouble. He's just with the exception of that the DV case. And a little factoid on Chad Johnson: he has a sister named Selena Johnson, who's an R&B singer. And I just realized that when I think I remember hearing that before. She's an R&B singer from Chicago. She has some tunes, man. She had this one song called Hit On Me with Mos Def, and it was just sort of like, how'd the hook go? It was just like, she would sing, and she would say like, "Why'd you hit on me?" And Mos Def would be like, "Baby, I won't do it no more. You said that before." And Mos is like, "Don't turn your back on me." And then she's like, "Nigga, please, you raise your hands to me." It's actually a pretty good song. Google it. Look it up. YouTube it. It's actually a really good song, but it's about domestic violence. And it's something that's not funny, but it's something that people need to know about. I guess people got mad at me on Twitter because I pointed out, or tried to point out, the hypocrisy that ESPN and the NFL had. Like, everybody was on their high horse. I said, like, you know, everybody, their people are up on their high horses. So they're so high up on their horses that they're getting nosebleeds. NFL countdown last week, they were, they said this, Tom Jackson said, "This is the worst week that the NFL has ever had." And Ray Lewis is sitting 2 chairs away from him at the desk. And it's like, are you serious, Ray Lewis? Now, people say, all right, so Ray Lewis wasn't accused of murder, but people in the media, they will accuse you. If you've been accused or you're around it, they call you a murderer. They say, "Ray Lewis was a murderer, blah, 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 blah." Kobe Bryant, to a lot of people, is a rapist. You know, people don't forget that shit. But apparently it just seemed like they forgot that, you know, Ray Lewis was involved in a murder. He might not have murdered somebody, but he knew who did it. And for them to say this was the worst week was just fucking ridiculous. And Javon Belcher, people are just now starting to remember the Javon Belcher incident where he shot his wife for going to a Chris Brown concert, I believe. He was having problems with his fiance or girlfriend and killed the mother of his kid and then went to the Chiefs practice facility and shot his head off in front of his coaches. I mean, that's domestic violence. That's a lot of mental illness, a lot of stuff going on right there. It's stuff that's happened before. And the NFL, I've said this before, is a microcosm of society. There's a guy who's not famous but works at like ShopRite and is up and has hit his wife and hit his kids. And, you know, people are taking these easy stances on, of course, you know, you shouldn't fucking hit people, but people are like, oh, I saw somebody, right. This is what NFL players shouldn't do. Don't murder anybody. Don't hit any, you know, of course they shouldn't, but you know, we're all hypocrites. You can't just like try to denounce the league and then say, and then you're watching a game on Sunday. You're watching college football. You're watching these guys elevate themselves to the next level, unpaid indentured servants. You're watching unpaid indentured servants on Saturday, and then you're watching them get paid on Sunday, and you're trying, and the thousands, countless guys that don't get to the NFL, and they're working at Enterprise, or they're working at UPS, or they're working at a car dealership, and they've, you know, suffered a lot of the beatings that they had to take. Granted, all these guys know the consequences and the repercussions of playing the game, but it's just, we're all involved, you know, we're all a part of it. And it, you know, somebody, I think Maranzio Vance might've said, is the same thing as people watching Gladiators, you know, in Roman times. And it really is, you know, it's just Maranzio Vance, friend of the podcast, new album out. It's Laughmatic, very funny album. You know, I think we're all implicit and we try to remove ourselves from it and act like it's not happening. The same people that try to get mad at me for the stuff I tweeted, still watching football, still tweeting about their team, you know? So it's a lot of hypocrisy going on. Yes, it is good that people are actually talking about it, but you can't sit there and blame the NFL for domestic violence when that's a part of everybody's culture. I mean, it's a part of American culture. It happens all the time. And we just, you know, you can't watch World Star Hip Hop videos and then turn around and just denounce the NFL. Like, you know, come on now. Like, they just want to lash out at everybody. Like even DiGiorno came under fire last week when somebody created a hashtag called, what's it called? Why I Stayed. And on the surface, Lucy Hale from Pretty Little Liars is on like a ESPN with a Honda commercial. You go, girl. Shout out to Lucy Hale, Aria from Pretty Little Liars. Album's not that bad. Not that bad. That was fucked up. Album is solid. She's got an album out. It's a country album. It's actually pretty good. All right. Where was I? I'm losing myself here. And they're getting on DiGiorno. DiGiorno should sponsor my podcast because I went to bat for him. So they had this Why I Stayed hashtag on Twitter, which was basically, you know, I guess women were saying why they stayed in a relationship that was abusive and stuff like that. And anytime when you see a hashtag, people, you can use it for whatever you want. You can make like I've made jokes on not domestic violence hashtags, but just on a general hashtag. And I think DiGiorno, unknowingly, whoever was running that account, just they said, why I stay hashtag why I stayed because you had pizza, and the internet just went crazy over that shit. And they wanted to, like, did they want to fire DiGiorno? Did they want to cancel DiGiorno over my fucking dead body? You would. You, why are you gonna? DiGiorno, one of the best frozen pizzas, one of the best pizzas in the game, frozen or unfrozen, and you gonna try to bring them down? They changed their sauce for you. They upgraded their sauce for you. You mother. You know, if you like, if you still watch Chris Brown dance on TV, you're a part of the problem. If you watch, what's that movie he was in, Stomp the Yard, and you don't get a little happy when his character dies, you're part of the problem. You can still eat DiGiorno. If you watch that movie, or if you still listen to Chris Brown music, you can still eat DiGiorno pizza, okay? If you still listen to R. Kelly's music or listen to I Believe I Can Fly, you can still eat DiGiorno. Everybody, they're trying to, like, get rid of everybody. You know, it's not, you will not put DiGiorno on the chopping block, you assholes. It's good-ass pizza, man. I always think that DiGiorno, like, I don't know, maybe it's just me being, like, a simplistic. You know, they try to add all that shit to it. I was talking to my dad yesterday, and he said that he got, like, some kind of DiGiorno stuffed crust with cheese in it. I think that kind of dilutes the greatness of that pizza. I think if you just get your standard issue, whether you get your cheese pizza, your pepperoni, your sausage, or your supreme, I think if you stick with those as a base, and then if you wanted to add your own stuff, sometimes I add little spices to it and pepperoni. I learned that from a guy. We were understudies in this play called King of Coons, which is based on the life of Stephen Fetchett. You've heard me mention that play before. His wife made us pizza while we were rehearsing, and they had DiGiorno, and they added shit to it, and it tasted great. So I started doing that. DiGiorno is awesome. And it was a harmless mistake. DiGiorno never hit anybody, you know? And then I was just seeing all these tweets like, oh my God, like DiGiorno apologizing to everybody. Oh my God, again, I'm sorry, we're sorry, we didn't mean it, okay, we didn't mean it. I won't do it no more, you know? So yeah, just come on, all right. Okay, I'm kind of done. I'm done with all this, with the domestic violence and the football being bad. If you don't like football, don't watch it. I've said this before. There's a lot of hypocrisy with the league, and just own up to it. NFL, own up to it. Roger Goodell and everybody else, own up to it. Know that you're still watching this. You're still watching the game. Like my, you're still watching football. Like my TV never really moved. My TV never moved from ESPN or CBS or whatever was on all day. I had college football on. So I'm an asshole if I say, oh, you know, if I try to act like I'm better than everybody, because a couple dudes acted out of pocket, you know? All right. Oh, comedy was great this week. I had a really, really good time doing stand-up. I made my triumphant return to Levity Live in West Nyack, New York. I had on Wednesday, I auditioned for Gotham Comedy Live, which is a television show, a live stand-up show on Access TV. It was a lot of fun. I don't know what's going to happen with it. I hope that I get booked on the show. That would be awesome. But let's just say I had a fun set. I had a good time. I heard words of encouragement from one of the producers. You never know what's going to happen. You never know. So we'll see. If it happens, I'll let you know. I'll give you the dates and tell you to watch it. Or maybe you can get tickets if you live in the area. If I book it. Hashtag if I book it. I'll let you know. And then Wednesday, Thursday. Oh, well, we'll do that. We'll do that later. Thursday, I had I opened for my good friend Paul Verzi, who headlined at Levity Live. And man, like that was it was just a really good show. Jason Law had hosted, Thomas Attila Lewis did a guest spot, Keenan. Oh my God, what's Keenan's last name? Let me get this comic. Where are we? I hate when you know how I get upset when I don't know. And every time I go to look up something on my computer, like it knows that I want to get information. It knows like that I'm recording a podcast and I'm trying to get actual information from something, and it tries to act slow. Keenan Weaver, comic out of Westchester. So he did a guest spot. I featured, and Verzi closed it down, knocked it out of the park, had an after party at Yard House, and it was good. It was just a really fun, solid show. Worked on some new bits, got some new ones out there in the club environment. Just really feeling good about the stand up these days, and just gonna keep working, gonna keep dropping some new shit. And it was just so much fun. So thanks to Levity Live for having me there both nights. Shout out to Paul Verzi for having me on the show. It was great. It was really, really fun. Fun, good times. Let's get into, I had an asshole moment, kind of an asshole moment, this week. What was it? Thursday. I went to this place for lunch called the Iron Tomato. I've mentioned it before on the show, and I was trying to figure out who had the better salad. Now, you know, I've talked about Chopped before. I always like to get that. Ever since JL put me on the kale salad, like I've used kale in smoothies and stuff before, but just like straight kale salad with like all the different toppings and whatnot on it. I really like that. I went to Iron Tomato and just said, you know, let me get a salad. Let me see what's up. I've had a salad before, but I wanted to compare it. I went in there and I said, hey, do you guys have kale? And they were like, no, we're out of it. And I was like, all right, let me just get the mixed greens in. And then I get all the stuff on there. And then as he's like chopping my salad, they don't chop it as intensely as they do at Chopped. So you actually get all of your salad in your actual, thing in your container. It's like not all over the place. Then I see a guy actually take out some kale and put it in the big bowl that they, you know. And I was like, fuck, you know, you guys. And I kind of got upset. I was like, y'all, I see y'all got kale now, young. I see y'all got that kale now. But I felt like an asshole because I initially felt like I was like, y'all ain't got no kale. I was kind of mad. I was almost gonna be like, fuck it then, I don't want that shit, Nick. It's almost like, I don't really want it, man. You know, kind of felt like a dick for a little bit. I guess that would just be a semi-asshole moment. Because I didn't get mad or anything, but I did kind of get mad at the fact that as this guy was, like, fixing my salad and about to put it in my package, that the other dude brought out some kale. And I was just like, damn, am I turning into a hipster? Or I just like how it tastes. I like the bitterness with it, with all the other ingredients. It tastes good to me. All right. So that was kind of an asshole moment. I want to talk about some movies. I actually went to the movie theater this week And I went to see two movies. I saw No Good Deed and If I Stay. So let's talk a little bit about No Good Deed first. Now, No Good Deed, I went to see this on Wednesday before the audition at Levity Live, which is in West Nyack, New York, at the Palisades Mall. And initially I was like, you know what? I'm just going to chill. I'm not going to go home. I'm just going to chill, maybe in the parking lot, watch Netflix on my phone. And I'm sitting there and I'm just like, you know what? I should just probably see a movie. And I looked at my phone. I looked at my AMC movie app. And I was like, I got time. It's like, I got time to actually watch a movie. So I was like, all right, what's playing? I could either see, like, and it, what, I didn't really feel compelled to see much of anything. Cause this is that September is like that mid September and January of the year are just like those periods where, you know, movies aren't that, they're not really putting their top shelf stuff out there. Now, granted, I had seen The Drop with JL and we went to see that. I enjoyed it. But I had already seen that. And I was like, all right, I knew No Good Deed was out. And I was like, all right, let me see it. Fuck it. I'll see it. It's about an hour and change. It's 84 minutes, hour and 24 minutes, actually. And it's got Idris Elba in it. I like Idris. I like Taraji. I was like, fuck it. Let's go. Let's do it. And I get the ticket, and the guy at the register was like, he's like, oh, this is theater 13 or something like that. And he's like, damn, it's in theater 13 already. That's what he said. I was like, what does that mean? And I was like, is that because it's whack or something? And he was like, no, it was actually all right, man. I saw it. It was okay. And then when I walked into theater 13, it was like the small movie theater. I think I actually saw like Beast of the Southern Wild before it, like it got all the nominations and stuff there. So it was like the small theater. And for a minute, I thought, you know, it was like VIP because I was going to see like a private screening and whatnot. And then one other guy came in, and then a couple came in. And so basically this, I don't want to really read the, I was trying to see if I could give you, basically, so I'll just give you the plot, and I'll just say that, No Good Deed is a movie about a man who was denied parole. My man played by Idris Elba, who was denied parole for manslaughter, and he killed one man and five women, and he escapes while he's on his way from the courthouse back to prison, and he kind of goes on a rampage. Then he goes to Taraji P. Henson's house and terrorizes her. And I'll have to say that this is the worst movie to be released during the Obama administration. One, because it's just everything. Now, I should have prefaced it by saying that this is an entertaining movie. Two very good actors in the movie who are leading the movie. It's everything that white America, it's everything that white America is afraid of. Like this big menacing black dude terrorizing somebody, killing women. He kills a white woman in it. And it's just like, oh my God. And people say, Chris, how come, man? You can't just look at it as that. It's just a movie. I was trying to explain to Verzi why this movie was just bad in so many ways. And he was like, man, you can't just be looking at it like that. And I was like, look, man, it's fucking like, that's how you gotta call it. I call it how I see it, man. Like I can't, suspension of disbelief is one thing, but it's just like Idris went from playing Nelson Mandela to plan this fucking prisoner, this murderer, man, that just abusing women. And it just came out at a time where he was like beating the shit out of, you know, Taraji, and, you know, just hitting a white woman, beating a white woman with a shovel, hitting women with products from Bed Bath and Beyond, knocking them over the head and shit. It's just, it's like, come on, man. He couldn't do anything else. It's like, could there have been another project? And he was one of the executive producers of this movie. At least one of them, or one of the producers, or something like that, man. And it was just like, really? This is it? And it was the number one movie in the country, man. It was the number one movie in the country last week. It was, like enough, you know, you want the, you know, it's really, there's a twist at the end, but it's, and it's kind of like, there's a reason why he's doing the things that he's doing. But overall, it's just like, you look at this movie and it's like, why did they do this? Why did they make this shit? They could have did some, this movie cost $13 million to make. They made $32 million so far, according to the wiki. I don't know, man. I would say you can definitely red box this. You could definitely wait till DVD, Redbox, Netflix. You're not really missing anything. If you like Idris Elba and you like Taraji, you know, maybe go see it. But right now, you know, shit, The Equalizer's coming out next week. And by gum, if I'm not doing anything Thursday night, I'm seeing it opening Thursday night. And I might see it in IMAX, even though it's fake IMAX. I might see it because I got Stubbs points. I got $10 in Stubbs rewards. So I might just put that 10 on it and put 8 and see Denzel save a white girl and redeem me from this movie. No good deed. Like, you killing white women and hitting on a black woman, man. Come on, Idris. Come on, young. Damn, young. I mean, I don't know. Like, it's just sort of like, it's crazy, man. I don't know. I feel some kind of way about it. It just didn't sit well with me. And somebody said, like, you can't be. It might have been one of my other favorite follows on Twitter, Cuffs the Legend, CUFFS the Legend. Just a regular funny guy. And he was talking about, he said something like, yeah, I know y'all better not be tweeting about how bad the NFL is if y'all gonna go watch Idris beat up on Taraji this weekend. Same thing. Same, like, playing into this hypocrisy that we all have. We're all hypocrites. No good deed. Wait for it. Wait for it on Netflix or Redbox. It'll be, when you do see it, if you're paying $12 to see this movie, you're wasting your money. If you can see it at a matinee, $6 or $7, you can hold off when it's in the cheap movie theater. The stakes won't be that high and you can enjoy yourself. I had to kill time before a show and I was entertained, but I was just like, it just didn't feel like in Obama's reign, during his administration in Obama's America, you're going to put out this shit? Come on. So the next day, Thursday, I put this movie off. I kind of was trying to feel like if I wanted to see it. I was kind of joking that I wanted to see it, but then I kind of really did want to see it. I saw If I Stay, with Chloe Grace Moretz and Jamie Blackley, I guess, was the lead, the guy that played her boyfriend. This movie is about a young girl in the Portland area who is a very talented cello player. And she falls in love with this guy who's a rock musician who's a couple years older than her, I guess. And she gets in a car accident with her whole family, her mother, father, and her little brother. They get in a car accident, and she is in basically like she's in a coma, and then she's sort of like in a middle place where she can decide if she wants to stay after all the tragedy or just go to heaven, and just, you know, die. And it's basically the whole movie is pretty much a flashback on her life leading up to maybe like the year or two leading up to the accident. And I gotta say, guys, I was pleasantly surprised. I really like this movie. I'm a Chloe Grace Moretz fan. I think she's a terrific actress. She's almost legal. It's not like I'm waiting for her to get legal or what, anything like that. I just think she's good. This movie, I was surprised that, like, technically, it was, I liked how it looked. I liked how it was shot. The acting was good. Muriel Enos played her mother, and it was really cool to see her. Muriel Enos is the detective on The Killing. What is her name on the show? Linden. She's Linden, or Detective Linden on The Killing. And I just like, she, you know, I always talk about how she's very stoic on that show. That was a show that like brought her out to where she was the star, and that was her coming out party, that series. And I thought, you know, like, she's very good, she's very stoic. But this one, she was vivacious. She had like, you know, she was like the fun mom. Like the parents were former like rock star, like they were rockers. They were, you know, young and cool and hip, and then they, you know, had a life. And, you know, like there was a backstory to the parents, and you could see like that there was love for the parents. You know, a lot of movies, the parents are like, fuck you, kid, you can't, da 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 da. And it was really interesting. It was good, like the family and how they were connected. So when the car accident happened, you know, you could be invested in what was going on, and you would feel for, you know, the stuff that was going on, because the parents were, the family, you could see that the family loved each other. They were connected, and it just made everything more compelling. I found out, you know, I recommend it. You know, this looks like it's on its way out. I think it's on its way out probably, but whoa, wait a minute. This movie cost $11 million to make, and it made $61 million. So obviously little girls are going to go see this shit. When I went to see it, it was Thursday, maybe around like close to 5 o'clock. It was me and two white girls. At the movie, like teenage girls, I guess. I liked it, man. I enjoyed it. And I realized after I watched it, it was directed by RJ Cutler, who is one of the producers. I think he's one of the, he is one of the producers of Nashville, which I really enjoy, but I just want to check and see what he is. If he's the creator or the producer of that show. Where the fuck? Damn it. So he's the one of the executive producers of the show. I'm a big Nashville fan. I think the singing is fantastic. That's one of the reasons why I think the music was good. The music was good in If I Stay. Like, I'm not a rock fan, and I don't pretend to be, but the music that the Chloe Grace Moretz boyfriend was in, the band that he was in, was good. Like, the music was good. I was feeling it. It was just fun. I got it. And he could just, it was really good. I liked the music. One thing though, like there's an audition, one of the best Juilliard audition scenes since Save the Last Dance. You know, might have been better. It was what would probably be a more realistic, Juilliard audition scene in a movie, because there's no way in Save the Last Dance where you're auditioning and anybody could just walk in and say, "No, Sarah, remember, you got this. You can do this." There's no way. That will never fucking happen in life. And this one, she goes in and the people are sitting there. I don't think they even say anything to her. Like, the stage manager comes in and says, you know, Mia, or what's her name in the movie? Mia? Nia? What the hell is her name? Mia Hall. Like, the stage manager says, Mia Hall? She goes in, she plays, and that was it. Like, after Julia Stiles in Save the Last Dance finished her audition, the guy was like, the auditor was like, "Now, Miss Johnson, normally we don't do this, but welcome to Juilliard." I'm like, get the fuck out of here. No, they don't do that shit. But one of my critiques of this movie, they said Juilliard a lot. Like, they really did say Juilliard a lot. It's like, did you go to Juilliard? If you audition for Juilliard, you got to go to Juilliard. And if you're going to Juilliard, you get the letter, and then Juilliard. And it was just like, damn, come on, shit. How many times are you going to say Juilliard? It sort of lagged at the end. Towards the end, it was like, all right, already. Jesus, come on. We know you're going to wake up. Let's go. Let's do this. But I did find out, like, RJ Cutler, he was one of the producers, creators of American High. And you can remember that was a documentary that initially started on PBS and ended up it started on Fox and then ended up on PBS about high schoolers, that were the class of, 2000. And it was a really good doc. And that was the school that Babe Parker, who was on, God, what was she on? Episode 26 or something like that. Babe Parker, who was on the show, she went to that high school. And what high school was that? Jeez, see, I'm digging myself into a hole. And Babe was on episode, if you go back to episode 28. Let's see. Highland Park High School was the name of the high school. Didn't even have to look that up. Good job, Chris. So yeah, man, I was pleasantly surprised. I was just entertained, and I was in a good mood when I went to go see it too. I was just like, I'm going to do a show. It's going to be a fun time. And it was just, I was just feeling good, and I liked that movie. It was entertaining. This would probably be a movie that, you could go see this, but I think right now it's getting to the point where, Denzel's back young. Like, I saw the Equalizer trailer and I wish I didn't see it. Like, Randolph Terrence texted me about, like, he's like, what should I go see? Should I go see The Drop or that Among the new Liam Neeson joint? I said, well, I haven't seen the Liam Neeson, but, The Drop was good. Anyway, I was like, you know, I'm really waiting on The Equalizer. And I said, if you can, don't watch the last trailer, because it's giving too much away, man. I think studios are now, like, they're not, what is it? They're not confident in movies now sometimes. And so they just show every fucking thing in the movie. And it was just like a part in the movie where it's like, oh, I wish you didn't show that, you know? But what it is, Equalizer is Man on Fire 2. He's like Creasy. John Creasy? And like, oh my God, I cannot wait for this movie. Like, I think Thursday I'm going to have to buy a ticket to go see, a show, just have to see it before. Yeah, you know what? I might try to go see it Thursday, because I'm trying to go to a show on a concert on Friday. So if I do that, you'll hear about it on the show, but I'm definitely going to try to see The Equalizer this week. So there you go. Two movie reviews. If I Stay and No Good Deed. So there you go. What else do I want to talk about? I haven't talked too much about TV. I talked about a little bit about BoJack Horseman, which was on Netflix. It's a fun show, good show. I'm starting to see more people are talking about it on Twitter, and more people like it, and it is good. I really like Garfunkel and Oates, that show. I think it's funny. I like Kate Micucci and Ricky Lindholm. It's a funny show. There's one episode. God, what was that? There's an episode that Moshe Kasher was on, and I think it was a weed episode where they try to get medicinal marijuana, and he had a really funny guest starring role in that. That was like maybe two episodes ago. I think they've done maybe six or seven, maybe like 6 to 8 episodes of that show they've showed, and it's on IFC. I like that. Also the show on FX, two shows on FX, one called, I think they're both FXX because they're comedies or something, Married and You're the Worst. Those are two solid shows. I like them. I've been keeping up with them. I think that season ended, so that's probably all on demand. If you have that and stuff, you could check that out. Music, and then we'll get out of here. Music, I really like this kid, Nick Hakim from DC. I've mentioned this before. Last year, I saw him open for Emily King at the Mercury Lounge, and this guy has an EP. He has it's called the Where Will We Go EP, and it's part 1 and 2. They're both on iTunes, but you can check it out on SoundCloud. He has a SoundCloud page, and you can listen to all those songs. I really like this guy. I'm a little mad at him because I paid $10 for a CD of his that had 3 songs, and I wrote my email down, and they said that they were going to send me like a link to his music, to like an album when it comes out, and I never got anything. It's been a year, Nick Hakim. You're still a talented dude. I'd probably go see you again. But hey, buddy, you know, be nice if, you know, you really sent that link, dude. I don't know. But it's really good. It's like very, very soulful, very like, it's just a soulful, project, and it's really good. And I think you'd be into it. Do I have any plugs? I think I do. Next week, I have a show at The Stand. I make my triumphant return to The Stand. I'll be there on I think that's the 24th. Wednesday the 24th at The Stand. Last Comic Standing audition. So there's going to be some of the funniest comics in New York City vying for a spot to be on Last Comic Standing. I'll be one of them. I'll do like 3.5 minutes of material. You can come to that show. I think you can get tickets online at The Stand. So if you want to come to that, it's going to be a fun showcase. And again, we'll see what happens. I'm just going to try to have fun and show what I can do as an artist, and just hope for the best, because that's all you can do when you. So I got some other dates coming up, and working on getting you guys some guests. And so, yeah, man. So that's the end of the podcast. That's the podcast for the week. Thanks for listening. Again, if you like this show, rate it, review it on iTunes, tell people why you like it, share it around, spread it around with your friends, and take it easy, everybody. Peace.